Okay, good evening, everybody. Shalom Aleichem, and welcome back. It is once again an honor to sit with you for that which is now the final thought or two in this series that began 6 weeks ago. I as well would like to thank Rabbi Shai Schechter, together with all the others who helped assist him in coordinating this incredible initiative, which brought so many people together to study Torah throughout the summer. The past 6 weeks, so many of us had plans and perhaps regular programming in Shurim that we'd have otherwise participated in. And even though there has been a major disruption for many of us in terms of our planning and scheduling, having the opportunity, really with very short planning, to participate in this incredible effort has been a personal honor. So as you know, if you've been with me at any point over the last 6 weeks, I have been offering each and every week a thought or two as to what may be the most important takeaways, the essential takeaways from the COVID crisis. Just to quickly recap, the first week I spoke about the importance of embracing uncertainty, that we are living, of course, in very uncertain times. There is so much that we do not know, and while naturally that sometimes makes us feel very nervous and very concerned and very anxious, we should recognize and appreciate that being in that state of uncertainty is in fact a great blessing. And if we can see it as such, it's something which can be very positive. I spoke about the importance of discovering or perhaps rediscovering the potential that we have within each of our homes. Since so many of us have been displaced, temporarily forced from our traditional houses of worship, our shuls, our schools, our Bate Medrash, having the opportunity to recognize and to appreciate that there is so much that we can create within our homes is also sort of a silver lining, a very, very positive takeaway that we can take from this crisis. I spoke about the idea of recognizing that when we are distant, either one from each other, when we are distant from ourselves, even when we are distant from the Ribbono Shel Olam, that is an opportunity to reflect upon where we are, even at times of apparent proximity, at times of Kiruv. We spoke about how the past 5 months, it's hard to believe, but it's really 5 months, almost to the day, has enabled us the opportunity to see in action the process of Torah Shabbat Peh, to see the way thousands of questions have been answered, have been processed, has been shared and disseminated by our poskim with the community. And that, of course, has been something which has been very thrilling and enlightening, an incredible experience and opportunity for us to learn from going forward. And last week, I spoke about the importance of developing a midah which is known as Hislamdus, the opportunity that we have been given to reflect and to notice things that perhaps we haven't always been as attuned to. And that's another sort of silver lining, a very, very positive takeaway that we can take from this otherwise very challenging experience. So that brings me to tonight, which of course is the last time that we will be discussing this. I set myself up from the outset to discuss six essential takeaways. That was sort of the title of the series. So I knew that I had one left. So let's go back. 5 months when this all started. For those of you who recall, and I imagine that's all of you, Purim had just ended, and we were gearing up to start the most glorious season of Nisan. And there was a lot of planning that was underway. We were all involved in various stages of Yom Tov planning. Some of us perhaps were planning weddings and other simchas. We were putting perhaps final touches on our summer plans. And as we have become used to as a community, we really have a very deep reservoir, if you will, of resources which provide us and our communities and our families with a very impressive range of options, of choices, of different things that we can select and choose from. I'd like to begin with a quote from a famous educator and author whose name was Peter Drucker. His writings contributed to the philosophical foundations of the modern business corporation. And he wrote several years ago the following: in a few hundred years, when the history of our time will be written, it is likely that the most important event historians will see is not technology, not the internet, not e-commerce. It is an unprecedented change in the human condition. For the first time, literally, substantial and rapidly growing numbers of people have choices. For the first time, they will have to manage themselves. And, he writes, society is totally unprepared for it. So as we were heading into Purim of this past year, 5780, we were blessed with a myriad of choices and opportunities and so many options to choose and to select from. We chose where to daven, and when to daven, with whom to learn, and in what base medrash. We would decide if we were getting together with friends or with family for Shabbos, or perhaps we would just have a quiet Shabbos without company. Some of us were still making final plans for Pesach. For those of us who were fortunate to be planning smachot, there were many decisions that we were making, from invitations to photographers, from flowers to dresses. Would the chuppah be inside or outside? Would the bar mitzvah boy lane? Would he only daven musaf? Would he only lane, not daven musaf? I can go on and on, but I think you get the point. We were blessed with many, many options to choose from. And then, suddenly and unexpectedly, it all came to a screeching halt. There is a book that was written in the past few years that's called The Paradox of Choice. It is a book which is written by somebody named Barry Schwartz. It is not among the books that we would refer to as Sifrei Kodesh, but I think there are some very, very important and really very valuable lessons that one can learn from this book. And what I'd like to do in the next few minutes, to sort of make a broader point over here, is just summarize, I would say, the three most important lessons from this book. The number one, or perhaps the first lesson that Barry Schwartz teaches in his book, The Paradox of Choice, is the more options one has, the harder it is to decide, and the more difficult it is to decide well. He points out that if you just look over the past 20, 30 years, particularly in the Western world, the United States of America, I would imagine more than anywhere else, you see that we have such an abundance of options and choices to choose from. In 1980, apparently, an average supermarket held 7,000 different products, and today the average supermarket holds 55,000. I'm sure that everybody's familiar with Starbucks. I happen rarely, if ever, to go to Starbucks, but you know that Starbucks is famous because there are many different types of flavors and different types of additives that a person could put in whatever sort of concoction they would like to put together. Apparently, and I've never actually done the math myself, so don't hold me to this, but if a person would actually go ahead and say, each and every day, I'm going to have a unique and different Starbucks drink. I'm going to take a certain flavor and mix it with a certain type of milk and get it with a certain, with caramel, without caramel, whatever the case may be. So it would take apparently 109 years for a person to actually taste every possible drink that you can order in Starbucks. That is obviously rather extreme. It's really hard to relate to that. But perhaps we can relate to the experience of going to buy, whether it's shoes or a car or virtually anything, which today is customizable. We even customize our salads today. A person can go into a salad store and be able to choose from an array of different options. So this would seem on the surface to be a very wonderful thing. But the reality is that having many options causes what he refers to as decision paralysis. When we have many, many options, so it actually discourages customers because it forces an increase in the effort that goes into making a decision. So what happens sometimes is customers just decide not to decide, which is a little strange. Some of the major corporations have actually realized this, and so they've reduced the number of options that they offer. Procter & Gamble reduced its number of versions of the very popular Head & Shoulders from 26 different options to only 15, and it increased their sales by 10%. So having many, many options is not always a good thing, because sometimes we just freeze and stop and we don't really know how to react, how to respond. The second important lesson that Barry Schwartz presents in his book, The Paradox of Choice, is that the more options one has, the less happy one will be, no matter the decision that is made. Now, what's interesting is that when we go from having no choices to having some choices, that's actually a very, very good thing. We are able to achieve and to feel a sense of freedom and autonomy in our lives when we can choose between one, two, three options. However, when we go from some two choices to many choices, that's actually very bad. And it has a very, very harmful effect upon a person. When people have no choice, so life can be unbearable. And as the number of choices increase, the autonomy, the control, the liberation that this variety brings, so this is very powerful and very positive. But as the number of choices keep growing, so the negative aspects of having a multitude of options begin to appear. And as the numbers of choices grow further and further, so the negative escalates until we become completely overloaded. And at that point, choice no longer liberates, it actually debilitates. There's something that he refers to as choice overload, which leads a person to feel very frustrated and very disappointed, despite the fact that you would perhaps expect that somebody who had so many options and so many choices would be thrilled. And the third and final important takeaway from his book that I'd like to share with you is that good enough is the best option. And he recommends that people should try to become what he calls a satisficer. What is that? So he says there are certain types of people in the world that are called maximizers. These are people who explore, and they like to explore, many different options. They seek maximum benefit or highest utility. They have very high standards and very high expectations. But unfortunately, some people, most people in this category, are very prone to experiencing buyer's remorse. They're not going to be happy with their purchase. A satisficer, as he calls it, is a person who explores fewer options from the outset. They consider what they need rather than what they want. The process is more efficient. And research shows that these people, not only do they make better decisions, but perhaps more importantly, their expectations are lower, and so therefore, ultimately, they are happier with the decisions that they made. The COVID crisis has forced us into a situation where we were suddenly facing very, very few options. A sudden and complete loss of control. And some of the most basic things that we had always taken for granted could no longer be assumed. And at the same time, anything was possible, but yet it seemed nothing was possible. Now, on the surface, of course, this is not a good thing. We were forced to settle and greatly limit the extent to which we were able to learn and to daven, as an example, particularly as a community. Getting together with friends and family all of a sudden became a big challenge and something which was virtually impossible, and in some cases still is. Celebrating smachot, happy occasions together, suddenly became, again, an extraordinary challenge. Some very, very important scheduled celebrations had to be postponed or canceled. Traveling, shopping, engaging in leisurely activities, whatever the case may be, suddenly it became very, very challenging for people to be able to choose from things that we never even viewed as being choices or options, just facts of life that we completely took for granted. Now, I want to contend this evening that that is not actually all that bad, because the reality is that more is often less, and less is often more. Of course, on the surface, it may seem like a luxury when we have so many different minyanim to choose from. It certainly is convenient, but as I've heard from many individuals, and I've experienced myself, there is something extraordinarily liberating about having one time and one place to daven, knowing exactly not only where my makam kavua is, which is a concept that we are familiar with, but having a zman kavua. And if you miss it, so then you miss it. Suddenly, instead of trying to choose and select the best in every situation, we were able to, and we had to, basically choose something which would be good enough. And I ask you to imagine, you know, what life would be like for us if we could just learn to say those words more often. It's good enough. It's very good. It may not be perfect. You know who's the first one to actually use those words? The first one in all of recorded history to say this is very good. It's the Ribbono Shel Olam. Vayar Elokim es kol asher asah. The Torah tells us that at the conclusion of the creation of the world, Hashem saw everything that He made. V'hinei tov ma'od. Vayera vayivoker yom hashishi. At the conclusion of the sixth day of creation, Hashem looked at all that He created and He said, you know, this is pretty good. Tov ma'od. Tov ma'od does not mean perfect. Tov ma'od does not mean I could not have made it better. Tov ma'od means this is good, it is good enough, it's very good, but most importantly, it's going to suffice. Rav Pam in the Sefer HaTorah LeMelech, he has a very interesting take on a fairly famous Rashi. Rashi in Parshas Lechecha tells us on the Pasuk, Vayelech l'masa'ov. The Torah tells us that Avram Avinu, when he returned to Eretz Canaan after traveling to Eretz Mitzrayim, so he stayed in the same hotels, the same inns, motels that he had lodged in on his way to Mitzrayim. Rashi quotes this over here, and the Torah is teaching us Derech Eretz, that a person should not change from one lodging place to another. Now, Pashup Shad in Rashi is that it's just it's nice to show loyalty. That if there was a particular innkeeper who was nice to me on my way down to Mitzrayim, so it's nice to show that sort of loyalty and to patronize him when I return back to Eretz Canaan. Rav Pam has a somewhat of a different take over here. And he says, you know, when Avraham Avinu went down to Mitzrayim, so he was very poor. He was very desperate. And Pasha says he stayed in the cheapest places because he couldn't afford the nice, fancy hotels. We know that when Avraham Avinu left Mitzrayim, so he was blessed with tremendous wealth, and he had many, many, many resources at his disposal, and he could have stayed in the nicest places. He could have stayed in the nicest hotels available at that time. But he didn't. He didn't. And why did he not do so? So he says over here as follows. Mikan musur haskel le'ela shehitzlichu v'nisashu osherav. Says Rav Pam, this tremendous musur that we could learn from somebody who has been fortunate to acquire a tremendous amount of wealth. Such a person doesn't need to spend on everything he can afford. Certainly not to waste money on things that are of no value. A person should spend whatever money is necessary in order to do what we would say are truly good things in this world, things that have eternal value. When a person has been blessed with an abundance of wealth, so this is a pikadon from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us the resource to be able to be mekadeshim shemayim, and Avraham Avinu was demonstrating, it's true, I can afford it now. Now I have options, now I have choices, now I have the ability to choose and to select from a whole variety of lodgings that were not available to me just a short time ago. But just because those options are there doesn't mean I need to exercise them. Just because I have choices doesn't mean I need to now suddenly preoccupy myself and waste time thinking about, should I do this one or that one? Should I get the red one, the green one, the blue one? No. Rather, Vayelech Lamasa'ov, the Torah tells us that Avraham Avinu simply returned to the places he was at before. Because you know why? It was Tov then and it's Tov now. There's another point that I'd like to make. That, you know, we are so used to putting so much faith in the decision-making process, and we convince ourselves that if we do not make the perfect selection, if we do not think about it enough, so then devastation will follow. That we imagine as if the entire world rests on my shoulders, and this decision is the biggest decision that I ever made, and the decision that I'm going to make is going to impact myself and the members of my family, my entire community, the entire world forever and ever. You know, there's a sefer, Etzos V'Hadrachos, a beautiful sefer in which many of the teachings of the Stipler that were shared with a therapist, Dr. Greenwald, were composed in a small sefer. Actually, there are two volumes. And some very, very, very powerful ideas that are shared there. So he has at the end of the Sefer, he has a section that are called Tu'uyos Shchichos, common mistakes that people make. I think this is actually the last one on the list. He writes, Shelechol ba'aya u'matzav kasha be'olam. Common mistake that people make is they think that any difficult and challenging situation that I face in life, yesh pitaron u'tshuva amitit u'brura, that there is a perfect solution. And if I do not figure that out, if I do not somehow discover the perfect solution to this problem, so it's going to be a total disaster. And he goes on to say, this is a big mistake. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to go ahead and to make the perfect decision, to select the perfect choice. We can't do that. All we can do is do the best we can. And when we obsess over the number of options we have, and we make ourselves crazy, this is such a big decision and I have to get it right or else, he says we end up working ourselves, unfortunately, much harder than we should. And just like Barry Schwartz says in the Sefer, Paradox of Choice, we end up feeling very depressed and very dissatisfied with the choices that we made and second-guessing ourselves and wondering, you know what? Maybe this was a mistake. Maybe I should have done this. Maybe I should have done that. And then we want to give it back and we have buyer's remorse. This is a big mistake. The reality is, says the Stipler, that most things in life, we don't know the perfect solution. We just have to do the best we can. We have to try our best. We have to expend an appropriate amount of time and resources and effort into the decisions that we need to make, make them, and then have the attitude, v'hinei tov ma'od. This is good, and I'm hoping it's good enough. And there's another thing. You know, we should all try to display and to feel more humility, even when we feel that we have made the right decision. All too often in life, we fail to give credit where credit is due. This is a pasuk that we just read this past Shabbos, Parshas Ekev. V'zachartu as Hashem Elokecha. Says the pasuk, you should remember Hashem your God, ki hu hanosein lecha koach lasos choyl. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who gives you the koach, literally the power, the strength, the ability, lasos choyl, to do great things. The Targum Onkelos says on this pasuk, v'titka yas Hashem Elokecha, remember Hashem your God, arehu yohiv lach etza lemikne nechsen. Because He is the one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who gives you the etza, the idea in your head, to acquire certain property. If a person is involved in real estate or is purchasing a stock or making some other sort of investment, he puts in the time and the effort and he does his research and he says, yeah, I know what I'm doing. I've got a lot of experience. I have a good approach. It's been proven over the course of time. He trusts his gut and he goes with it. Comes along the pasuk and says, V'zacharta Hashem Elokecha, ki hu anosein lecha koach lasos chayil. If you made a good purchase, if you invested wisely, remember HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you that ability. So when we put too much time and effort into all the decisions we need to make, we also run the risk of forgetting who is really behind these decisions. We know that the Torah tells us that we should not have chemda lo sachmod beis riecha lo sachmod eishas riecha v'avdov v'amasov v'sharov v'chamaro v'chol asher lo riecha. We should not covet our friend's possessions. It's a very, very difficult mitzvah to relate to. The Ibn Ezra very famously asked, how could it be that the Torah legislates our feelings, our emotions? Jealousy is a basic human feeling. There's nothing that we could do. How could I suppress that if that's the way I feel? So the Ibn Ezra gives a famous answer. I'd like to say what I believe the Ibn Ezra is saying just a little differently than he says it. I know that sounds a little strange, but there's a fascinating concept known as relative deprivation. As economist Robert Frank writes the follows, as a young man fresh out of college, I served as a Peace Corps volunteer in rural Nepal. My one-room house had no electricity, no heat, no indoor toilet, no running water. The local diet offered very little variety, virtually no meat. Yet, although my living conditions in Nepal were a bit startling at first, the most salient feature of my experience was how quickly they came to seem normal. Within a matter of weeks, I lost all sense of impoverishment. Indeed, my $40 monthly stipend was more than most others had in the village, and with it, I experienced a feeling of prosperity that I have recaptured only in recent years. Absolutely amazing. A person who is well off, who travels to a third world country where there's tremendous deprivation, limited supplies and resources, $40 a month is his stipend, and only after a few weeks, he starts to feel prosperous. He feels wealthy relative to all those around him. You know, when I was thinking about what I wanted to sort of save for last, in my last essential takeaway from the COVID crisis, I thought I was going to talk about weddings. Because, in my opinion, one of the most beautiful developments of the past 5 months has been to be able to participate sometimes by actually being present, and more often just participating virtually in some of the most beautiful simchas, bar mitzvahs, weddings in particular, which have really been reduced dramatically in terms of the scale, the number of people that have been there. And in my opinion, I know this is a very, it's somewhat of a controversial point, and people may disagree with me, which I completely respect. In my opinion, this is actually a wonderful development. Now, to be clear, there's nothing wonderful for those people who had very, very difficult times planning and rescheduling weddings and having to change locations 3-4 times a week beforehand, and people who unfortunately had close family members and parents and grandparents that couldn't participate. I'm not going to try to put a positive spin on that. There's nothing wonderful about that. It is what it is. We hope and pray that Be'ezras Hashem, these sorts of challenges will no longer be things that we need to face in the future. But the reduction in terms of the size, the scope, and so many of the frills that we had at our weddings beforehand that we assumed were just sort of necessary. How could you have a wedding without, and you fill in the blank? So I think that this reduction of options, frankly, of choices, It's been a really, really wonderful thing. So instead of talking about weddings tonight, and I just waited actually until the last 5 minutes to actually even say the word, I'm talking not so much about the need to spend less and the need to appreciate that perhaps we have taken our abundance of wealth and resources for granted, and that's true, but really to focus on it from a different angle. And that is just to think about it from a perspective of choices. We have had so many choices, so many options to choose and to select from. So many choices. And we feel very blessed. But the truth of the matter is, it's not always a blessing. As we see from the paradox of choice, sometimes more is less and less is more. And maybe, 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 since we've now been forced against our will to experience months of having very, very few options, maybe we can see that, you know what? There is something very redeeming about that. There is something that's very liberating about being in that place and that space where suddenly I don't have to make myself crazy by deciding between 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 50 different options. I only have two options, if I'm lucky. And you know what? Vayar Elokim es kol asher asah, vihine tov ma'od. You know, I've quoted from lots of sources tonight, some Torah sources, some not Torah sources. I'm going to conclude with one of my favorite short stories. It's so short that I'm going to finish it with the time remaining. It's called The Mexican Fisherman. If you've never heard this, so I hope you'll be as inspired by it as I am, and if you have, I hope the Chazorah you'll appreciate. An American investment banker was at the pier of a small coastal Mexican village when a small boat with just one fisherman docked. Inside the small boat were several large yellowfin tuna. The American complimented the Mexican on the quality of his fish and asked how long it took to catch them. So the fisherman replied, only a little while. The American then asked, why don't you stay longer and catch more fish? So the fisherman said, I have enough to support my family's immediate needs. The American says, but what do you do with the rest of your time? So the Mexican fisherman said, I sleep late, I fish a little, I play with my children, I take siestas with my wife Maria, I stroll into the village each evening where I sip wine and play guitar with my amigos. I have a full and busy life. The American scoffed, you know, I am a Harvard MBA. And I can help you. You should spend more time fishing, and with the proceeds, you can buy a bigger boat. And with the proceeds from the bigger boat, you could buy several boats. Eventually, you'll have an entire fleet of fishing boats. And instead of selling your catch to a middleman, you could sell directly to the processor, eventually open your own cannery. You could control the product, processing and distribution. You would need to leave the small coastal fishing village, and you'd have to move to Mexico City, then LA, and eventually New York City, where you can run your expanding enterprise. So the fisherman said, and how long will this take? So the American businessman said, it will take about 15 or 20 years. And what then? He said, what then? That's the best part. Then the time would come when you can announce an IPO and sell your company stock to the public and become rich and you can make millions. Millions, he says, then what? Ah, he said, then you can retire and you can move to a small coastal fishing village where you can sleep late, fish a little, play with your kids, take siestas with your wife, stroll to the village in the evenings where you could sip wine and play with your guitar with your amigos. You see, my friends, so often in life, we are chasing the opportunity to go ahead and to acquire more, to choose more. We are so enthralled by the prospect of having an abundance of options. Because if I can have more choices, then I can acquire more and build more and do more and be more. But the reality is that more often than not, all that we have right in front of us. It's nice to have a minion factory. It's nice to be able to go anywhere at any time. But you know what? We should learn from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We should fulfill the mitzvah of Halachta B'drachav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looked at the world that he created, which could have been perfect, but he said, V'hine tov ma'od. It's good. It's good enough. And that should be a very, very important and lifelong message. I think an essential takeaway that we can take from this COVID crisis. I thank you so much for joining me, not only this evening, but for those who have been with me over the past 6 weeks, and I look forward to opportunities to learn with you again in the future. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening.